Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's show. My very special guest is Maya Dewar, and we will be talking about her new book, Work That Matters, Create a Livelihood That Reflects Your Core Intention. Author and longtime meditator Maya Dewar wandered through several professions and dozens of jobs, including alfalfa sprout packer and Buddhist chaplain, before she finally unlocked a combination of work that was deeply fulfilling and sustainable. These experiences provided her with rich material to examine the emotional, psychological, and cultural barriers to creating work that expressed one's core intention, what she calls liberation-based livelihood. A writer, consultant, and coach, Maya draws on her decades of Zen practice and training in anthropology to create powerful tools for integrating mindfulness into the workplace and in clients' everyday lives. Through her workshops, online programs, individual coaching, and writing, she has supported people around the world to create work that matters. For more information, you can visit her website, which is mayadewar.com, and that's M-A-I-A-D-U-E-R-R.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Maya to the show. Good day, Maya.
Hello, Robert. I'm really happy to be here with you and your listeners.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to have you here and talk about this topic. When you look at statistics on how dissatisfied people are with their jobs, I mean, it's just astounding to realize how many people are in that category.
It really is, and I included something early on in the book about that. I think it was from Harvard Business School that, basically it's an incredibly high percentage of people who, talk about work as having an impact on their lives, but the impact is really negative, right, on their emotional and their physical health. It is the place where we spend most of our waking hours for most of us. So it can really be a place of a lot of suffering if we're not, intentional about how we use that time.
Oh, exactly. And I don't think we're here to suffer. it just doesn't.
No, I don't think so either.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned in the introduction, I mean, you had obviously quite a span of jobs in your background. So, how did you become particularly interested in work? As far as a field of inquiry.
Yeah, well, Robert, it actually goes back to one of my strongest memories as a child. And I can remember being a little kid and waiting for my dad to come home from work and sitting at the dining room table with my mom, and the food was getting cold. And he would, turn up usually an hour or two late because he'd been working overtime. And he was just really unhappy with his work situation. Just felt like a lot of pressure to do more than the hours that were allocated for his work. The relationship with his boss was a little bit problematic. So he came home most every night and was pretty miserable about work. And that really stayed with me. And as I was growing up, I would see, other friends and their parents. It was similar. And then when I got my own first job, it just, the pervasive attitude was like work was just something that you had to get through until the weekend or until your vacation, right? And something mm-hmm. in me just I think a seed got planted back then, and I just made a promise to myself that I didn't want my life to turn out that way. So I promised myself to do whatever it took to find work that I loved, and that was what led to a lot of, experimentation with different jobs and careers. And I can talk more about that, when we get there. But that was the seed of it, was just really, seeing the unhappiness that my dad brought home every night, and really wanting to do my life differently.
Yeah, to me it's just amazing how so many of us end up following a path or have a journey that, that seed of purpose is really set in childhood, and it's usually, mm-hmm. I'm not going to have this happen to me. This is what I'm going to do
right.
to make sure it doesn't.
Yeah, that's not, and as I talked about in the book, that's not necessarily the most wholesome, source of an intention is like, what you're trying to run away from. But, it does plant a seed. And I think, to turn it around and flip it to the positive, I really, I became deeply committed to finding or creating work that I love. And that feels to me like it's what I really want to support other people to do. So it had a positive consequence, down the road.
Yeah. So, do you feel that or how realistic do you feel it is for people to love their work, or, even if they're currently in a job right now that is maybe doesn't really kind of hit it for them, is there a way for people to kind of shift that around, or is it a case where maybe they need to look for something more in line that would bring them satisfaction? How does that satisfaction work?
Yeah, well, I think we have a lot of messages that we get transmitted to us about work, and certainly, our social structures kind of put work in a certain position in our lives. So we're kind of swimming upstream. So I will acknowledge that, right? We have a lot of conditioning mm-hmm. that we have to unpack and understand where these messages come from. But I do, your first question was, is it realistic to expect to love our work? And what I really think, I would just reframe that a little. I actually do think that it's realistic to be able to love our life, right? And work is one part mm-hmm. of that. I think there's a lot to balance out. And I like to say that this book, that Work That Matters, it's not a rainbows and unicorn book. I feel like in my life I've been through, mm-hmm. I don't have oodles of money that I can just relax and try whatever I want and follow your bliss and the money will follow, right? So it really acknowledges that there are, realities that many of us have to face. And if you have a family and you need to support them or rent or mortgage, it's not always possible to do what you might think is your fantasy job, right? So I think the book takes mm-hmm. a very, a realistic and yet a kind of visionary approach to that and tries to redefine what work can be for each of us. And it also, I think, what, my approach and what the book is trying to do is it keeps pointing people towards what's going on inside of us. And one very important mm-hmm. aspect of that is what I call a core intention. So it's what is the reason that we're on the planet? I think a lot of books about work focus on, your passion. What is your passion? What do you love to do? And that's not bad, but the core intention that I'm talking about is the why that's underneath there. So if the passion is what you love to do, the core intention is, well, why is that? What is it about it that, you really find meaning in and purpose in? Why are you here on the planet, basically? And I think that coming at it from that approach just allows a lot more flexibility with how you do your work life, so that even if you don't have the job that you might think is your perfect job description, the more you become connected and aware of what your core intention is, and the more you can bring that into your work, whatever that might be, you can actually really increase the level of your satisfaction, of your happiness. So it's really, I call it an inside job, right? It depends on getting to know ourselves better and then learning how to translate that into our work.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. First of all, the idea that your book is not all rainbows and unicorns is, I think, perfect, because, too often, I've had, people who have written books and authors about the topic of work and job satisfaction and all that kind, and very often it is that rainbow approach. But I think it loses so many people, you know, who are really faced with the reality that it's just not that way. And if you communicate that the reality of life, so to speak, you know, within the context of the book, then I think people are going to be more open to, you know, listening or you know, internalizing some of the information set. So I think that's great. You know, I mean, it would be great if it was all rainbows and unicorns, but, you know, this life with this isn't always like that, you know. So I think that's a wonderful, you know, first thing. And then, you know, the second one of, you know, looking at how you know, define work. I mean, it seems like what you're saying is that, you know, first of all, you can, you know, if you get in touch more with your core intention, that you can bring more satisfaction into your current job. But it also seems like you're saying that, you know, your, quote, work life can be more than just your job. I mean, you can do other things that are considered work that are more in line with your core intention, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is probably where, you know, my wearing my hat as an anthropologist comes in, because I tend to, like, you know, any definition that society gives me, that's my job, is like to take a look at that and really question it, like, where is that coming from? And I have to say, you know, like, another really formative experience for me was about, boy, like 20, 25 years ago, I was lucky enough to be able to spend about a month on the island of Bali in Indonesia. And I, you know, being sort of like an anthropologist and just really like watching like people there and how they live their life, which was very different. You know, so every morning I would sit out on my patio and I would watch the scene that was going on in front of me. And what I would notice was that there were, and for some reason, I'm not really sure why this was, but it was mostly women there who did the work. I don't know where the guys were, but the women would go out, you know, they would work in the fields. Uh-huh. Yeah, they would work in the fields. They would even do construction on the road. So they were out there every morning working hard. And yet, at the same time, they would bring their kids along with them. Their friends were alongside of them working. So there was a lot of laughter, a lot of play, you know, family was right there. And they would stop, like, you know, in the middle of doing a project, and they would just begin doing, it's called a puja, so it's like a religious ceremony, a Hindu religious ceremony. So they would set up flowers, you know, like in the field and do a ceremony. So all of this was kind of like one seamless flow, and that really struck me, because I think I had never really noticed when I got back to the United States, it became very clear to me, like, how segmented we have these different parts of our life. You know, we go to work, and then we come home, and that's where our family is. You know, then we go to church, that's where our worship is, and then we have time for leisure, but they're all in separate boxes. But what I watched in Bali with these women was like it was just one kind of beautiful flow, and they overlapped in many ways. And so I think that's where I come from with really, you know, I feel like, and that's actually purposefully why I use the word livelihood rather than job in the subtitle of this book, to create a livelihood that reflects your core intention. Because I really think livelihood kind of opens up our possibilities. It's not just like, oh, well, this is what I earn money doing, so this is where all my fulfillment has to come from. You know, so I think there are scenarios, and I kind of play with them in the book, and when I coach people, I do this. Just, you know, maybe you have this job right now where, you know, you need it to pay your rent or your mortgage. And there are ways where you can actually make it more fulfilling. You know, but maybe your true calling is actually playing guitar. So, you know, how can we structure your life so that you're able to do more of that, you know, play in a band on evenings or weekends? Even if it's not the source of all your income, you're beginning to kind of blend these things together in a way that's much more fulfilling to your life. Oh, are you still with me, Robert? Hello.
Do I have you there?
There you go. I think I dropped out for a second.
Okay. No problem. You know, technology is wonderful when it works, but and again.
I don't know how much of that response you heard, but hopefully it all got through.
I heard all of it. I heard all of it, and I'm
good.
Sure,
okay.
Everyone heard all of it. So that was great. And it is you know, the idea of livelihood, you know, if you know, I love the expansion, that word, you know, it's like the expansion of the idea of living life rather than job, because it does include those things like, you know, playing a guitar or you know, volunteering, doing whatever, you know, whatever it is,
right.
You know, those kinds of things. Yeah, that can kind of satisfy you. So for someone who is right now, you know, unsatisfied with their work, what would you say their first step be? Would it be kind of getting in touch with that core intention?
Yeah, that would definitely be a big first step. And actually in the book I share what I call, you know, I think it's good to just understand where you're at in this process because, you know, we're all different and this is also not a one-size-fits-all book. It just recognizes that people are at different points in their work and their life. And I do think it's important to figure out where you're at in this process. And to me, there are like, there's probably more than this, but there's at least three pathways to get to this, what I call liberation-based livelihood. So, and I think the first step is actually understanding which one of these three you're on. And so that first path I call plan your exit strategy, which is that, you know, things have gotten so bad in your current situation that you really do actually need to figure out how to get out of there, how to, you know, create a new possibility and move into that. I actually think that this is kind of overrated, and it's what I did for like the first 20 years of my work life. I got really good at that. Like, you know, I would become frustrated or unhappy with some things about the position, and then I would just, you know, leave and find something new. And I would be very excited about the new position, and then, you know, 6 months or a year later, it would be interesting to find the same thing would happen again. So it was actually more of my internal patterns that were the problem than anything else, right? But I hadn't really done due diligence around that. So I think it's really important, you know, if you think you need to leave where you're at, to look a little bit more deeply. And I do think there are some situations where that is true. You know, I think if you're in a job where your moral values are in direct contradiction to what's going on in that workplace, you know, the most obvious example I can think of is you're a vegetarian, you work in a meat market, right? So every day... Right. Every day you're going to have a moral dilemma, and that's not going to go away. So that is definitely a situation where you need to plan your exit strategy. But I do think in a lot of other situations, maybe what's really required is just to look and see like, well, if I actually spoke with my boss and if I asked for something like more flexible hours, you know, would that do it for me? Could I make a switch there that felt, you know, more nourishing to me? And that might require you to make some effort, and maybe it's a little hard for you to do that. But that is actually like a growth edge, right? So I think it's important when you think you're in that plan your exit strategy to like look again, you know, ask for some feedback, and it may not be what you think it is. So that's pathway number one. The second pathway is to love the job you've got, which is actually where the core intention comes in very strongly. So, you know, say you're in a position where, you know, what you're doing is okay, doesn't contradict your values, maybe it's not your dream job, but for right now it's where you're at. And there are strategies and practices that I share in the book where you really can connect more with your core intention and bring that into your job. And it will shift everything for you. It's kind of amazing how one small shift can be so dramatic. And then the third pathway is that maybe you actually are at a point where you're ready to take on something new, to leap into a more creative phase of your work life. And that's the pathway I call create work that you love. So maybe it is, you know, looking for a new job that's really going to be much more in tune with your core intention, or maybe it's even starting your own business or a nonprofit. So, yeah, so those three things I think are really important for people to kind of get clear, you know, which pathway am I on? And from that, it gets easier to figure out, like, what the steps are to take you into that next phase.
Okay. Yeah, those are very distinct very distinct path, you know, that, so I could see where that would, you know, kind of getting a handle on where you're at with that. Now, when it comes to, quote, right livelihood, you know, I mean, is it just an individual, kind of individual expression or need as to determine what is, quote, right?
Yeah, well, that phrase, and I don't actually use it a whole lot in the book, but it is in there a little bit, and because of my own background with having a Zen Buddhist practice, that phrase actually comes from original Buddhist teachings. So right livelihood, the way the Buddha originally taught it, it was actually quite simple. It was really just livelihood that did not cause suffering to others or to ourselves, to cause unnecessary suffering. And so the Buddha actually had, like, you know, a number of different professions that were categorized as not right livelihood, and those included things like actually butchers, since we're just talking about meat markets, butchers, you know, dealing in arms, dealing in like human trading. So those were several things that were very explicitly said, like that is not right livelihood, right? But it was really just a kind of a negative definition. So it's right livelihood was anything that did not cause harm. So that's the roots of that phrase. In the book, I kind of expand on that more and, you know, talk about it more in the sense of the liberation-based livelihood. So it's really, you know, it not only doesn't cause you harm, but it's also actually allowing you to express your core intention, and it brings you joy. And so when I talk about it that way, it's like, you know, even though it originally came from a Buddhist teaching, you can pretty easily see how it actually applies to all of us, and it doesn't need to be still connected to that religious tradition.
Okay. So in when you said liberation-based livelihood, that's just, what, the sense of happiness and joy that you get from that livelihood? Because when I think of liberation, I just think of freeing, and, you know, it's like, you know, here I go.
Yeah, well, I write a lot about freedom. So, you know, the freedom that comes when we do this process like I'm talking about, like really questioning, you know, where are these definitions that we get? Most of them are actually not ours. What are truly, you know, the values that we hold inside? What are our intentions, you know, before they get overlaid with these conditions that come from our society, our family? So it's the freedom to actually express who you are through your work and through, you know, the core intention that you have, so that that becomes a vehicle for expressing your core intention.
Yeah. Now, when it comes time to determining one's job focus, now, as I mentioned in the beginning, you obviously had quite a variety of jobs. I too, you know, have had in the course of my journey quite a number of different things that I've done, and not even what I'm doing now was never even on the radar whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
So when you have someone who is kind of right now in a position who, you know, in a job that maybe they're kind of stuck at, or they feel like this is it, you know, this is what I'm going to do till the day I retire. What do you say to them with the idea of, you know, there is a lot more that will probably happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think this is where that, and in the book I present them as the six keys of liberation-based livelihood, and the very first one is what I call become intimate with your core intention. You know, so in working with that person, I would really try to, you know, open up a number of avenues for them to explore, well, what do you feel is your purpose for being here? What really lights you up? And one of the ways I have of doing that is actually inviting people to do what I call mining for gold in their job history. So doing an inventory, you know, actually listing out all the things that you've done before in your life, and not only paying jobs, but things like, you know, maybe when you were a teenager, you were a camp counselor, maybe you're a parent. So all the responsibilities that you've held, and actually looking at them and unpacking them and just seeing, like, where did I feel a spark? You know, and what was that spark about? So that will really give a lot of clues about what your core intention is. So I think, you know, one of my very first steps when I work with people, and it's the very first key in the book, is to spend a lot of time really kind of on a treasure hunt for what that core intention is.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes the key that everything pivots around, and it really helps you make much better choices. You know, again, even if you're staying in the same job, I mean, I'll just give you an example from my life. And this is also helps to understand, like, where it's different from what you love to do. So, you know, for example, for me, I feel like I'm really good with words. And so most of my life I've been writing. I was a freelance editor for quite a while. So the word thing was really, you know, that was clearly a passion of mine. But what I found, there was like a period of my life where I was a freelance editor and, you know, working on a lot of articles, and it was quite tedious, actually, and it wasn't so fulfilling. And I couldn't get why that was until later on I had a chance to work on a magazine where the magazine was devoted to social justice issues, and we had a lot of really great writers who were just sharing very provocative ideas, really heart-opening material, and I had a chance to edit their work and then get it out to people and help them find new readers, and I absolutely loved that job. And I figured out, and this is like my long process of, you know, becoming intimate with my core intention. So in a nutshell, my core intention I've learned about myself is I really love to help people expand their hearts and their minds. And so when I realized that, it made sense to me, like, oh, that's why, you know, all the other jobs that had to do with words and writing, they were okay. But, you know, when I had that one, that matched up with my core intention, and that was what brought the fulfillment to it. So I think the more, again, I feel like I'm on a repetitive soapbox here, but it really is so much worth the effort to do this dive and to become familiar with our core intention, because, you know, you can take just about anything and then you make better choices about, you know, how you do it because you know what it is that brings you joy.
Yeah. And from my personal experience, you know, and I didn't, wasn't able to really recognize it as, you know, kind of becoming intimate with my core intention was, you know, probably, I guess it's now almost 10 years ago, where I had, an intuitive person kind of talk to me, and she was, her comment for me on my purpose, and this is one that was back in the days when tapes, you know, audio tapes, she made me an audio tape, and I was playing it, and she was just, she basically said that, you know, my purpose was, you know, bringing, you know, inspiration and things, you know, into earth, into reality, and it was like,
nice.
It just struck me at such a, you know, soul level. I mean, I was literally kind of shaking that it was just like, this is the common thread, you know, between, because I was a corporate trainer and I dealt with, you know, creating training tools and, you know, so anyway, which led, of course, now to the radio show. But it was, you know, once I saw that, or, I mean, once I recognized that, it was, you know, from that point on, anytime that I had an opportunity to bring something into reality that it was like an idea, I just jumped at it. It was like, okay, this is in line with, you know, with what I want. And they're very different things, you know, but, so I can understand how that, just getting in touch with that intention, that core intention, can really help you in the decision-making, too, of what it is that you want to do, you know, for work or for livelihood.
Absolutely. I mean, that was a beautiful example, Robert. You just, you know, you talked about just how, you know, honing in on that and, you know, in your case, it sounds like you got it from somebody else's reflection, which is often really helpful because people often see us more clearly than we see ourselves. But, you know, that process of, like, really getting it, and sometimes I call it, it's almost like when you're dowsing for water, you know, the stories I've heard about it anyway. You know, you're out there and you've got the dowsing stick, and then when there is underground water, the stick actually vibrates. So it's like you'll know when you hit your core intention because you'll just feel that kind of, you know, electric spark go through your body, like, oh my gosh, that's it. That's like the thread that connects everything. And yeah, it does make for much better decisions as you go into the rest of your work life.
Exactly. So, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Maya any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in, and we'll get to them right after the break. And then when we come back from the break, Maya, I want to kind of look a little bit more at the six keys to liberation-based livelihood. You know, we talked about the becoming intimate with the core intention. So I kind of like to maybe take a little bit closer look at the other keys, okay?
Great.
Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Maya Duer. We're talking about her book, Work That Matters, Create a Livelihood That Reflects Your Core Intention. And again, you can find out more about Maya by visiting her website, which is mayaduer.com, M-A-I-A-D-U-E-R-R.com. And again, there is a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Maya.
I'm with you. Thank you.
Great. Okay, great. Okay, so I want to talk, your book really kind of goes into the six keys to a liberation-based livelihood. And we've been talking a little bit before the break about the first one, become intimate with your core intention. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the other ones, just to give the listeners a really good idea of the help that they can receive by reading your book. So the second one is value your gifts and time. You mentioned a little bit about mining for our gifts or that. So what would you say as far as how important it is for people to recognize what their gifts are and value the time?
Right. Yeah, so the second key, value your gifts and time, it flows actually naturally from the first one, because I found in myself, and I have to tell you, all of these were field tested, so you know, this comes from my own, like I said at the beginning, yeah, life of experimentation, and just and also at a certain point, which is like maybe about 10 years ago, a little bit more than that, what I began to learn was that it helped immensely for me to bring my meditation and mindfulness practice into this process, because I did, you know, earlier on, I did things that all of us would do when you're confused. Like I, you know, went to a career counselor, I took some aptitude tests, and I, read books like What Color Is Your Parachute, and they all helped, but something wasn't clicking. So this process of, you know, bringing a more contemplative and aware perspective onto this exploration helped. So what I started to figure out, like, you know, the core intention was the very first thing I had to get clear on. But then what I started to notice was how important it was for me, like as I became more clear on that, I actually had to, and I think the best word I can use for it is I had to protect it, and almost from myself. Because the tendency for me was, you know, I would get a lot of requests from people like, oh, can you help me do this? Or sometimes there were job opportunities, and it feels good to be asked. So often I would just say yes. And if there were things that I was really good at, you know, I would say yes, and it felt good in my ego, oh, I'm doing this thing. But what I started to see was like, you know, if those things were actually not connected to my core intention, what I was doing was draining my energy. So the more things I said yes to that I shouldn't have been saying yes to, there was less energy left over to actually devote to things that were related to my core intention. So that's what that key is about. It's about understanding how important it is to to actually say no sometimes. And, you know, sometimes I have this mantra for myself, just because I'm good at something doesn't mean I should be doing it. So in the key, you know, there are, there are practices to begin to understand, like, oh, okay, you know, how do I understand this is really what I want to say yes to? You know, this particular job opportunity is going to give me this great chance to, you know, express my core intention. And this one, not so much. So I have to really get good at saying no. So there's a practice of saying no that I have in the book. So that's a little bit more about key number two.
Okay. Well, now, I have a question. I know someone who is in transition or kind of looking, maybe she's, you know, at, you know, planning your exit or, you know, somewhere between and creating the work that you love. I mean, one of those two paths. But her job experience is extensive and solid, you know, I mean, so she's got this, you know, pretty strong history in a particular area. The area that she's looking to move to, the opportunities for someone so, quote, qualified are limited. And one person in her network indicated that she should dumb down her resume. And it just seemed wrong. You know, I mean, this seems wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of goes against the idea of, you know, recognizing your strength and valuing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's your, I mean, cause, and right now, I mean, really, there are a lot of people out there who are, quote, overqualified for jobs that they're seeking. So what would you say to people, you know, if it's within, you know, that core intention, they kind of recognize that this is really something that they, you know, really want to do. And really would like to do, and they have that situation that occurs.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think in that particular case that you shared with me, I mean, you know, I would kind of weigh out the different elements that are there. I mean, if it really is like a great opportunity and there's like a way you can kind of sneak in the door there and then, you know, be offering your core intention and find fulfillment. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to like have skillful means to get there. And if that means, you know, quote unquote, dumbing down your resume, you know, hey, if that's what it takes to get through the door like a Trojan horse, then do it. I think to me, I would be more concerned about like, what is the environment in that workplace though? You know, I certainly have like had some situations where I've thought about applying for jobs and I actually went to a fairly unconventional graduate school, California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco. It's probably more mainstream now, but when I went, it was like kind of on the fringe, like an alternative graduate school. Mm-hmm. And I often thought like, you know, I got my Master's of Anthropology there, and afterwards I thought, oh, like, you know, is this going to impact my ability to get a job, you know, if I have this on my resume? And that really concerned me. But the more I thought about it, the more I actually realized I don't know that I would want to work in a place that didn't want me because of that.
Okay.
You know, so I think there's, and this actually is where it gets to valuing your gifts and your time, right? So that's, there's like a gift of discernment that's there. And I think the tricky piece is that we need to be careful not to let our sort of desperation run away with us. You know, so it's true. It's like, you know, again, like we talked about earlier, balancing our need for economic stability. But I think we need to be really careful that we don't just sell it away to the lowest bidder, right? So, and I do think there's an element of faith and trust that's involved in this. And my experience has been, and I don't mean to sound too magical here, but I really do believe it's true. Like the more discerning that I got, and the more I didn't just like apply for anything and settle for anything, the more I actually found that there were opportunities that met me where I was at and really did value who I was. So, I think it's a process, but I think it requires us to really not sell ourselves too short. To not put ourselves in a situation, a work environment that's not going to, you know, really recognize and value us, and to just keep persisting because something will show up that's right for us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. That's really good to know because, you know, again, you know, there, in today's work environment, I mean, it can, you know, can be real tricky. You know.
I hear you.
Yeah. Okay. So another one of the six keys that you have is called breakthrough inertia and take action. So, you know, one of the things that I just really feel strongly about is, you know, is taking action, you know, and, you know, not hoping things into existence or, you know, meditating them into an existence, you know, that, you know, and so in this particular key, you know, how, I mean, where does inertia, you know, kind of, what does inertia look like, you know, that people may find themselves in?
Right. And I should say it's really important, I think, to work through the keys in order. So I'm not talking about just taking any sort of action here that's just based on our reaction, like, oh, I need to do something. But it really is important to go through key number one and number two first so that your, you know, your action really is based on your own inner wisdom. But I think what often, and again, using myself as an example, what I found happened at times is, like, interestingly enough, like, you know, the closer I got to thinking, like, oh, you know, here's my core intention, here's, like, a job that I would really love, or, you know, a way of working that I can create. But when I would start to get closer to that, then I would actually get a little bit paralyzed, like, oh, but I can't because it's not perfect. You know, so that's, to me, what inertia looked like is, like, waiting for a perfection to happen, either, you know, in myself, like, I'm not ready yet, or this is not the right opportunity. But really, a lot of it was inside, right? Like, I need to get better at this before I can do that. So getting into that place of, you know, sometimes it's called analysis paralysis, where we know what we actually want to do, but we can't take the action. So this key, basically, it's a very pragmatic key, and it looks at, you know, where those sources of procrastination come from, and some very, you know, realistic and on-the-ground strategies for actually breaking right through them so that we do start taking action.
Okay, great. Making friends with uncertainty, another key.
Yes.
You know, there are a lot of people who aren't friends with uncertainty, and you know, uncertainty creates a lot of angst for some people.
Right. Yeah, it certainly can. I mean, I think in some ways that's a human tendency to want things to be sure and certain. And again, as we progress through these keys, this is now key number four. So what we often find as we start taking action is that then we're in this territory where we're taking some risks, right? And that's really exciting, or it can be, but it can also be terrifying. You know, so maybe we really get clear, like, oh, okay, so now I know, you know, I can actually, I have a vision, like, I would love to start a bakery and serve, you know, people in my community through this bakery, and that is my liberation-based livelihood. And now I'm starting to work through, move through my procrastination, I'm actually doing things, but then I start to realize, like, oh my goodness, like, you know, well, it may not work out. You know, this is kind of a little bit terrifying that I'm stepping out here on a limb and I actually don't know what's going to happen if I continue on and, you know, follow this dream that I've got. So that uncertainty, you know, like you're saying, the angst that could come from there, anxiety, even outright fear, the more that we're able to develop a capacity to just sit in that place where we don't know what's going to happen without reacting to it, we're going to open up all kinds of possibilities. So, and to me, the very best way to do that is to have some kind of, you know, mindfulness or contemplative practice in your life. That's just a really great way to kind of strengthen that muscle to be with uncertainty. So that's a lot of key focuses on in that chapter.
Yeah, that does. Mindfulness is very helpful, you know, with that, dealing with uncertainty. And then the fifth key was think big and make the most out of your resources. So I guess once you deal with uncertainty or you make friends with uncertainty, think big. I find people have difficulty with thinking big, you know, kind of reaching for the stars.
Right. And the way I like to say it, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that thinking big means, oh, that means I have to create a huge project that's going to make millions of dollars and, you know, impact thousands of people. That's a very literal way of thinking big. But what I'm referring to is more of just like watching where we have our own glass ceiling. You know, where are we limiting ourselves? And that's where we can, you know, again, through some practices, we can actually expand our idea of what's possible for us. One thing that I offer in the book, the idea is to start a big ideas journal, you know, so literally get like a big fat journal and then maybe, you know, once a month or more often if you can, just get into a practice of writing down your biggest dreams in there. And, you know, the only ground rule is that it never has to be actually executed. You know, so, hey, you want to run away and join a circus? Write that, you know, create a collage. You know, it's mostly just to practice, you know, giving exercise to our visioning muscles, what I call it. Because I think the more we can do that, the more we are able to actually step into that place where it's like, oh, well, that seemed kind of ridiculous, but this version of it may actually be workable. And how can I do that?
Yeah, yeah. And it really kind of opens you up to recognizing a world of possibilities. I mean, you know, and
exactly,
you know, and you know, that little quantum approach of, you know, endless possibilities, you know, available, you know, just requires focusing your attention to kind of bring them into reality.
Right.
And then the last of the six was build a circle of allies and ask for help. So right now, you know, I think people can probably maybe start, you know, if they don't already have kind of a particular circle of allies, then definitely get started and then ask for help. Ask for help sometimes is a difficult one.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, it's amazing the power of influence and the people that we're surrounded by. You know, that can either lift us up or bring us down. So it's really important to see who you're surrounded by. And, you know, if you have people in your life who, you know, a lot of them who generally, when you start to even just give a little bit of a hint about, you know, what you're thinking of, like, oh, I think I might want to look for this job that, you know, where I can do this. And if they're immediately coming from a place of fear, like, well, don't do that because, you know, you'll never make it. Like, that's your red flag right there. And that's where you might need to find some new people to put in your life. And, you know, actually, I mean, when I started early on, like about 10 years ago in this current phase of my business and life, I did that. Like, I looked around to see who's out there who's doing what I can imagine someday doing. And I was actually kind of bold. You know, I would get on Twitter and I would send them a message like, I would love to learn how you did this. And so, you know, you might actually need to build that new circle if you don't already have those folks in your life, the people who can be mentors, people who can be allies, and who really want to see you succeed.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, those are the six keys to liberation-based livelihood that people can find out more about in your book. And then part three in your book is navigational tools. We won't go into that right now because that's kind of a key for people to get the book and kind of really put it into action. But one of them is craft your personal mission statement, some strategies and tools for navigating the pathways that we talked about, and then creating personal action plans. So those are definitely great tools for people to be able to put into effect these creating a liberation-based livelihood. So In your experience, in your work, you know, with helping others find happiness, are there any particular examples that stand out of that you could share with us, you know, of how people have, using your principles, have found happiness and switched up their life?
Yeah. Well, I always think of one gentleman whose name is Lyndon, and he actually took the book was a course. It was an online course before it became a book. So the very first round of the online course, and it was called Fall in Love with Your Work back in those days, and Lyndon took the course, the first round of it, and I call him my poster boy for work that matters now. Back then, when he first took the course, he was working, and he was actually based in the Deep South down in Louisiana. He was working in healthcare marketing, and he was actually making pretty good money doing that, but he had a nagging feeling that that wasn't what he was meant to be doing. So while he was taking the online course and working with me both individually and in the group, it became really clear to him, and this is the core intention piece, that he really loved supporting people on their spiritual path. So what he decided to do, and this is, and I think it's really important to note that, like, the journey towards you know, work that you love doesn't always happen in one fell swoop, right? So it's kind of a step-by-step process. So the very first thing that Lyndon did, he didn't feel like he was quite ready to let go of that job. He had a family to take care of. But as we talked about this and talked about some possibilities, like how could he actually get some experience doing this, he enrolled in a chaplaincy training course. And then he actually started offering a free yoga and meditation group to his community, which was a little bit, you know, unusual. Again, like right in the Bible Belt, he was doing this. But he found that there was actually a huge response. So people were really hungry for that kind of approach. And he had this really wonderful way of teaching it. You know, he came from a Christian background himself, so I think people really related to him. But they were looking for a different way to, you know, take care of themselves and explore their spiritual life. So he was doing this, and he wasn't actually making any money from it, but he found so much fulfillment from doing this kind of alongside his healthcare marketing job. And then as his training went on in chaplaincy, he was eventually able to let go of the healthcare marketing job, and now he's a full-time hospice chaplain in his community, and just, you know, so much happier, and has found so much more meaning and joy in his work.
Wow, that's great, you know, and, you know, that's one of those cases where, again, you know, you can kind of hold on to, you know, what you've got, and then, you know, inch your way into, you know, that transition. And for a lot of people, that makes it not as scary, you know, of a process.
Right.
And, you know, get yourself a couple of successes, you know, doing what you love. And then that kind of reinforces and also kind of takes away, you know, some of that uncertainty when it comes to actually making the final or making a move, you know, into that completely.
Absolutely. And I remember one thing that Lyndon said that was seemed really important in his process, and I've included in the book. But, you know, it's also, I think, really helpful to, again, so often I think we connect, okay, here's how I'm earning my money, and it has to be the way I'm, you know, finding my fulfillment. Sometimes it's going to take a while for that to happen. So for him, like, he really felt freed up when he realized, like, well, hey, I can just offer this for free for a while. You know, I can offer this yoga and meditation group, and it doesn't really matter if I make money from it, because I'm getting something else. I'm getting experience. I'm beginning to learn, like, this really does fulfill me, and I can gradually move into it becoming more of a income-producing stream down the road. But right now, like, I'm just going to do it for fun and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, for you, right at this moment in life, which path would you say that you're on? Are you in the love the job you've got?
Well, I would say that I'm probably more on the third path, which is create work that you love, because I'm doing that every day, right? And I do think when you're somebody who's an entrepreneur or a freelancer, you know, every day you have this opportunity to, well, first of all, you've got to go out and you've got to find clients, right? But you can do that in alignment with your values, and you can create new projects for yourself. So that's, I think, the beauty of being on the path of being a solo entrepreneur is, like, you really get a lot of creativity as part of your path. So that's probably the one I would put myself on right now.
Great, good. So now the last question I always ask is what do you hope that readers are going to take away from reading your book?
Yeah. Well, you know, I really hope that if someone, you know, who's listening to this is feeling kind of stuck in your work life, you know, either if it's work is actually a source of suffering for you, or, you know, it's just not quite what you hoped it would be, that I really hope that the tools and the practices that are in this book, you know, give you a way to actually shift and to move from that place of just feeling kind of like yuck about your work to actually feeling excited about it and really feeling that it's a source of joy and meaning for you.
That's great. Yeah. And, you know, and the practical approach that you take in the book and these very definite steps. I mean, to me, it's a plan that could be easy to follow, you know, and it makes sense. And I think it would also probably give a lot of clarity for people who right now aren't necessarily happy in their job. So, I really thank you for your time today, Maya. It's really been great, and I'm sure the listeners will have gotten a lot from what you shared with us today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure and a really great conversation. I really appreciate your questions.
You're welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Maya Dewar. We've been talking about her book, work that matters, create a livelihood that reflects your core intention. And again, you can find out more about Maya and her book and other work by visiting her website, which is mayadeuer.com, and that's MAIADUERR.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.